after the whole affair, there was a professor in Nijmegen University, and I was brought there after the kidnapping in Nijmegen. And I was in hospital for 2 days or so.
Yeah, three days. Yes, to recover.
And I discussed with him, or he advised me to go on holidays and write down everything. As far as you can in your memory, write it down. And that's what I did on the Bahamas. This is the notebook I had on the Bahamas, and I've written down everything. So this was my work during night.
Yes.
She has seen me writing all the time, so all my memories, as far as I could, as a daily routine. So it starts on the 2nd of October, and now it goes on 3rd of October, 4th of October. So in my recollection then, I went through the whole affair again. It's a small block note, and it's a little bit dirty. And there are a lot of pages. In total, there are 50 written pages, and I have made a lot of corrections in it. And it's not nice to show to other people.
And still being tired. Yeah. Being tired. He was tired, you can see that. He would never, ever write it this messy. Because he was tired. It was an emotion.
You made the diary almost 30 years ago.
Yes.
How often would you say you have looked at it since then?
Almost never. Maybe I have been through it once or twice in 30 years. But now...
So that's how he is. if it's over, it's over. It is done and it's there and that's it. He's able to do that, to have knobs turned off and on.
And who did you show it to before?
Nobody.
You're the first one who sees it.
Who sees it?
Yeah.
I knew.
Yeah, he knew. Nobody has seen this.
Not the children, nobody.
Even not my children.
That's private, it's a diary.
In 75, Cosgrave's Law and Order Coalition was in government. On October 2nd that year, you were busy showing American visitors around your factory in Anacotti, just outside Limerick. So you hardly noticed that 12 people died in UVF attacks that same day. The IRA was on a ceasefire, of sorts, though some of its members were getting disillusioned. None of that mattered much to you. The next morning when you met Eddie and Marion, it mattered.
I went out of the garage. I drove about 100 meters, 200 meters on Monoline Road where we lived. And then I was stopped by a policeman. At least he had a police uniform. And he asked me, "Are you Dr. Herma?" And I said, "Yes, I am." And then he said, "Come out of our car, blah, 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 blah." And then I had to go in another car in the back seat. And I was immediately blindfolded and so. And they drove... in the other direction, so I passed my home again. At that moment, they asked me the name of the German ambassador, and I said, "I'm Dutch." And they were a little bit surprised. And then immediately, I think it's strange, but I immediately started to make a plan, to be organized, to know what's going on, where am I, in which direction are we going. So I couldn't see anything, but I saw some light, and I saw the sun. So we are driving north. And who are they in the car? We were with the four of us, three of them and myself. And try to find out who they are and listen to the motor of the car to find out what sort of car is it. And so the first half hour or three quarters of an hour, I was just trying to orientate, where am I, what is this, what are they doing, where are we going, how many people, etc. And then we stopped after a certain time, I don't know exactly, but maybe 3/4 of an hour. We stopped. I haven't seen it, but at a farm, because I heard sounds of animals, and there they had the plan to change cars, but finally they didn't do it, and I heard other voices, and I heard another car. And then we drove from that farm to what afterwards seems to be Mount Melek. But the only thing I try to do is, where am I? What is this? What are they doing? Thinking about, don't be aggressive yourself, or let them go, find out where you are, make a plan. I was put in a small room. I felt so rather uncomfortable, and put on a bed, and there they left me on my own, and there I started, where am I? In a small room and on a bed and nothing to eat. I became hungry. So what I found out rather soon, that there was a girl with it. So I knew that there was a girl with them. And two young men.
And what was the atmosphere in the car and then in Mount Melek among the other people?
Oh, they were nervous, frightened, shouting to each other. They were not friendly, or not also against each other. But yeah, they were not nice. they were rather lovely. I was an object, so they treated me as a sack. So. Put me in there and sit on me, but I can't understand that. They were very nervous. For them, it was a lot of excitement.
You were from Arnhem in Holland, and for 2 years in your 50s, Limerick was your home, and you became its biggest employer. You gave a living to 1,200 people in an area of high unemployment in an economy reeling from the effects of the oil crisis in the early 70s. Eddie Gallagher and Marion Coyle demanded the release of 3 prisoners in exchange for you. They thought you were so important to the Irish that the government would give in. What followed was a 36-day standoff, for you, the longest, darkest month.
I happened to be in Arnhem at the very moment with the sun. The sun left for the company where he worked.
That's the same company I was working for.
And then the telephone rang and somebody from the board asked me, could I come to the head office, and didn't say why. And I thought, what can I do there? But okay, I said, I'll come. And a few minutes later, the son came back home. It was early in the morning. He threw his suitcase on the floor and said, Daddy is kidnapped. And we were surprised and almost laughing, but what sort of nonsense is that? Kidnapped. And then I understood why they wanted me at the head office. So I was wondering, what's happening? What is that? And then there they told us that they got a message from Dublin that somebody had taken him. And then I decided to go immediately back to Limerick, because the two sons, being his father, kidnapped, and I were on their own, though they were at the school where the headmaster was a very good friend of ours. I wasn't worried that it would be, but I said, well, I'll take them back to Arnhem. And the president of the company, he said, okay, we go directly. And they hired the plane, and we went over to collect the children. The children were at the airport, and the army was there, and the police was there, and it was a very strange situation. Of course, they were upset. The youngest one was crying, and the other one was more composed, and we flew off. And, I was wondering, what was this all? But from the very moment I thought, as my husband always was able to cope, whatever happened, you would be able to cope with this too. And I thought, he's a strong personality, in good health, has a lot of experiences, could face problems, physical problems, being hungry or thirsty or whatever. He wouldn't mind. That would be not a point. He would not get mad or shout.
I didn't know that it was so good.
You were, as you are.
Yes.
I wish to earnestly appeal to the people who have kidnapped my husband to return him safely to me and my family. My husband is a good and kind man, devoted to his family and to his work. Work which is important to Ireland and particularly to Limerick.
That was the second day or so that people convinced me that it would be good that I reacted, and I wanted to hold my private life and to protect the children.
Will you describe Mount Mellick for me, what the conditions were like?
It was a very small room. There was a bed. They throw me on the bed, and at that time my feet were tied, my hands were tied, I was blindfolded. But dusty, dirty, stinking. No, not nice.
And were you blindfolded all the time?
Yes, yeah, all the time. Up till, I don't know exactly, but maybe 14 days or so.
And what about your ears?
No, nothing special. Yeah, there has been a period that they had some cotton wool in my ears, but that was not all the time. I could hear reasonable, because when I was in Mount Mellick, I could hear a radio in the other room. So I heard the noise of a radio.
And did you hear news bulletins?
Yes, because that Eddie Gallagher, no, I didn't know at that time it was Eddie, but at the time of the news, it was portable radio, and he took the radio and stood in the door opening. So he opened the door, and I could hear the news.
That Mr. Herrema would be killed within 48 hours unless Dr. Rose Dugdale, Kevin Mallon and Jim Hyland were immediately released from prison. Gardaí are appealing for information about a dark green Cortina car.
He didn't realize how important information that gave to me. Yeah, this is rather in the beginning, the 7th of October. Heel erg emotioneel. Hij is waarschijnlijk ook wel intelligent, maar hij heeft waarschijnlijk geen schoolopleiding. He is very emotional, but he seems to be intelligent, but he has no school education. He uses a lot of slogans and terms about politics and about Marxism, but he doesn't really know what it means, I think. He likes his guns and plays with guns all the time during our discussions, and at certain moments he puts the gun against my head or in my back. Hoe betrouwbaar is hij? Ik wil heel open tegen hem zijn en zo sportief mogelijk. Het is een gedeelte van mijn politiek om hem te accepteren als een betrouwbaar, open sportsman die vecht voor zijn idealen en zijn theorieën. How reliable is he? I'm very open and sportive to him. It's part of my policy to accept him as a reliable sportsman who fights for his ideas and theories. I want a good relationship with him and accept him as a normal person. Als een normaal persoon.
Did you sleep?
Yeah, I say no, but at the same time I know that you can't You can't be without sleep for 14 days or 3 days. So I must have slept, but half an hour or an hour, and then wake up again and try to find out where you are and what's going on. And in the meantime, I heard people in that other room. So, and sometimes there came a car in front of that small farm. And I heard voices, and so there was a lot to listen, and sometimes there was a helicopter in over that house, so, and I didn't understand why it did come down. So. Ik bespreek met Eddie Kelleher de situatie waar we in zijn, en ik maak hem duidelijk dat ik wel met hem wil praten. This is the 8th of October. Hij vertelt mij dat hij een soldaat is. En als hij een soldaat is, dan mag hij mij als burger niet doodschieten. I discuss with Eddie Kelleher the situation we are in. And I tell him that I try to build up a relationship with him. He told me that he is a soldier. And as when he is a soldier, he is not allowed to kill an innocent civilian. I promise him not to run away or not to escape under the condition that he A. doesn't kill me, and B. that he treats me better than he has done up till now. But at that time there is a helicopter over the house, and again he is very nervous and keeps his pistol against my head.
At what stage did you start talking to Eddie Kelleher?
Every moment I could talk to them or ask them questions or start a discussion, I did it, because that's what you need to understand people. You should talk to them. So I talked as much as possible, but there were only a few possibilities. They weren't in the room. I had a discussion with Eddie Kelleher, and about the fact that I was blindfolded, and but I had to do that while he was standing in the door opening. So I was lying on the bed, and he was standing there in the door opening. And I always tried by asking questions. He should come in the room, but he didn't come. Then a few days later, I asked him, could I take off my blindfold? And then he said, yes, when you have meal, we'll take off the blindfold. But you promise us, me, Eddie Kelleher, not to look at the moment we come in. So he wouldn't know who he was. He told me in a certain way that I'm a soldier. And then I said, well, if you are a soldier, you should treat me as a prisoner of war. And there is a convention of Geneva, and the way you are treating me now are in conflict with that treaty. So you should do it in another way. And then, yeah, he accepted it, but he didn't change the situation.
And with Eddie Kelleher, when you got to know him, what was your developing sense of who he was, or what sort of a person he was?
The first thing, as I read before, emotional. So a lot of emotions. He could shout and jump, and he was young. That's another point. So I realized there that he was as young as my eldest son. So I saw him a little bit as a son. And so. It's hardly to believe, but I think it was a rather nice person. Yeah, really, that I had the impression from the beginning. So,
but different with Marion.
Yeah, for Marion, I had no idea. I can't say that she was. I couldn't reach her. She didn't want to talk to me. She didn't want to have contact with me. Sometimes he shouted something, so sort of, shut up or so. For I think that's the difference. For Marion Coyle, I was just a subject they needed. And for Eddie Kelleher, I became more and more a person. That's the difference.
And which of them was in control?
I don't know. Finally, Marion Coyle took the decisions, but Eddie Kelleher, I think that she was more in control than Eddie Kelleher. But for her, it was also a little bit easier, because Eddie Kelleher literally jumped always in front, so immediately he reacted on everything immediately, and she was a little bit quiet, looking, so waiting.
The whole country is being turned upside down looking for you. Gardaí have issued photos of your kidnappers. The net is closing around the cottage in Mount Mellick, County Laois, and safe houses are becoming scarce.
I'll first try to explain why I have written this. After a few days in Mount Mellick, which was not so nice, to make an understatement, he promised me to go to another place. And during the night, and after 4 or 5 days, we went in a car, and we went to what I call, I don't know exactly where it was and where it is, I still now don't know exactly where it is, but to a small, I call it a Swiss cottage. It was a wooden house, and inside it was rather warm. It was very nice to be there, and they gave me something to eat, and then after half an hour or an hour or so, they said I should go outside and wait outside. So I was standing there outside, and it was in the middle of the night. So now it's Saturday, the 11th of October. Na lang wachten en na een gesprek met Eddie Kelleher over verschillende onderwerpen, komt er een auto en we gaan naar een ander huis. After long waiting and discussions with Eddie Kelleher about different subjects, a car arrives and we are going to change houses. We arrive after a certain while in what I call a Swiss cottage. It was a very nice and warm. They gave me a meal, but then I had to wait outside. I was standing in the dark, blindfolded, and my hands tied. Could I run away? Because I have the possibility now. They are not looking after me or at me, so I could run away. But at the same time, I say, no, I can't do that, because I promised not to run away, and I won't break my promise. I promised not to do so, so I stay. Toen we bij dat Zwitserse cottage weg waren gegaan, na een half uurtje auto rijden, zeiden ze tegen mij, je moet je blinddoek afdoen, we zullen je helpen en we zullen je handen losmaken en we gaan naar een huis toe en je moet zo normaal mogelijk proberen om van de auto naar dat huis te lopen, want als mensen je zien, dan moet het zo normaal mogelijk lijken. Zo. When we came to the other house, they asked me to take off my blindfold, and they helped me with that, and the tape from my hands, because I had to walk in the new house as normal as possible, because people could see us. I get some indications, because the blindfold was off, and I saw a signpost, Naas, 8 kilometers, or 8 miles, I don't know. There was a shop named Robinson, and I got another sign, St. Patrick's Park, playing children, caution. And then, going in the house, we went up the stairs, and they put me in the box room, as it later seemed to be. I was again blindfolded and tied with hands and feet.
In the end, your captors settle for a tiny semi-D in a council estate in Manastravn. For you, home becomes a room little bigger than a large double bed. Some of your neighbours are soldiers taking part in the manhunt.
No, I went in the house and we immediately had to go upstairs and in the other direction back in a small room. As they later say, that's normal in Ireland. It's a box room. It was a room from 2 meters by 2 meters, so 4 square meters. And there we were. Yeah, in the first days I was there on my own. And they were in a bedroom next to that box room. And days were long. We had to wait and doing nothing.
What things could you hear? Because I'm imagining being in that room and you faced out onto the street.
What I mainly heard are trains. And I tried to find out at the time looking at my watch, but I still had the watch. what time is it now? Where does the, because I had no idea where I was. Where does the train come from? And then I said, well, it might come from Dublin. And it's so now. So maybe it left Dublin at that and that time. So and every day on the same time that the train came at the morning at 10 o'clock or in the afternoon at 3 o'clock or so. So by the train, I tried to find out where am I, but I didn't manage.
The company says it's satisfied from a tape recording that Dr. Herrmann is still alive.
Mentally and physically, I have suffered already. Please do not put my life in further danger by looking for me. Please help me. Love to my family.
It's a funny story about how he read it, because our younger son, who has a talent for dialects, etc., there were always discussions, was it really his voice, and was it really daddy who was talking? And then officially, more or less officially, this young fellow said, no doubt for me, because of the good English and the bad accent. So he says, only my bad, who can say it's so correct, but in such a poor way. Which was fun.
Yeah.
What was it like for you, Mrs. Herrmann, when you heard those tape messages?
Well, the text, I didn't take it seriously, because I knew he had to say those things. But it didn't change my trust that he was in control of the whole situation.
But it must have been very upsetting for you as well.
Oh no, it was not really upsetting me. It didn't make me emotional or, no.
Do you remember crying?
No, I don't think, no, I don't think. I was nervous, but no, not crying, no.
And what about you?
I think I didn't cry the whole time.
Thinking of
her. Yeah, one day, that is in the book also, so stop thinking about her youngest son. So,
being a small fellow.
Would you read that for me?
If I can't find it, because we had a nice discussion a week ago. I said to my wife, there is a sentence about not thinking about harm, that's the youngest son. And she said, no, I haven't seen it. I said, yeah, well, it is in. I went through it and through it and through it, and I couldn't find it. And finally I found it, but I don't know where it is. Yeah. So. Oh,
I think it's right in the beginning.
That's here ongeveer.
That's
under.
Yeah?
Yeah. Oh yeah, here it is. On Sunday, the 19th of October. Wat doe je op zondag normaal? Mijn gedachten gaan naar huis. Ik heb mij de gedachten aan harm. What do you normally do on Sunday? So I think about home. And by the thoughts of my son, harm, I have been crying a little bit. But I decided to stop with that and not to think again about my wife and my children. I bend them out of my thoughts. At the time we were in Monasterhaven, we knew also by the news that the police were looking where we were. And I don't know the exact date, but at a certain date, Eddie Kelleher said to me, they are coming to search the house. And then we will go up the attic. So that was a form of warning that they were coming. I don't know how he knew. And then the following day he said, well, now they are coming. And we went up to the attic. And we were sitting there with the three of us, Marion Coyle, Eddie Keller and myself. And the police came in the house and they searched the house, opened that small, what is it, like, opening in the attic. And I saw his face, I saw the face of the policeman, so looking around, but he didn't see us. And then he went away. That again was a moment, because if I would have made some noise, they certainly would have found us. But I had promised Eddie Kelleher not to run away, not to fly, not to show. You can say, well, I more or less helped him at that moment not to find us.
He had a gun.
Maybe that was, oh yes, yeah, he always had a gun with him. So it was, he never had empty hands.
You can't see them yet, but at 7 a.m. on October 21st, armed detectives approach just outside your window. Out the back, snipers crawl across the garden.
Early in the morning, they came in the house with a lot of noise and shouting and shooting, and Eddie Kelleher shoot on the police. Now, Eddie Kelleher and Marion Coyle were in the other bedroom, but at the moment that they forced the door, they came out of that other room, and he came in the box room, and then he closed the door, he took that small mattress that was put it in front of the door and tried to barricade the door. And then the police didn't come up the stairs because I don't know why, but they stopped downstairs and we were upstairs. De politie is buiten. Hè, ze hebben ons dus gevonden. En ik discuss met Eddie Kelleher de situatie. The police is outside. They have found us. We discussed that without food and drink, we could survive another 2 days. We are very hungry and very thirsty. Eddie Kelleher filters his urine through a piece of the blanket and tries to drink that. I tell him that he better can suck his fingers for the coming 24 hours. That gives him the feeling that he eats and drinks. We have no toilet facilities and Marilyn Coyle has her bad days. One day later, we have a possibility, find help by the police, to have some food through the basket lift. I call it the basket lift because they were downstairs, we were upstairs, and there was a rope with a small basket in it.
The siege continues at the house in County Kildare where Dr. Herrimer is being held at gunpoint. From Monaster Evan, Reg Cullen reports.
It's in Evans Park is now turning into a psychological struggle. Garda admitted this morning that their main tactic would be the waiting game, depending mainly on the kidnappers realizing that there's no hope of escape and to give up. They said that their object was to get the business over without loss of life. A Garda spokesman said that they knew that there was very little food upstairs, and they had offered food and drink to the kidnappers.
And then you were there for another 17 days?
Yes. Yes.
In that one room?
Yeah. Yeah. You want details? No. No, that wasn't nice.
A woman is also believed to be in the room with Eddie Kelleher and Dr. Herma. While at one stage it was thought that Kelleher was alone with his captive, Garda say they believe they heard a woman's voice in the room.
No toilet facilities, so just imagine. Huh? With the three of you, no toilet facilities, no water, nothing.
The Dutch ambassador, Dr. Van Ralte, visited the scene this morning with other embassy officials and later left for Dublin. This is Reg Cullen in Monaster Evan.
We had some newspapers, and we had that paper on the floor. And that was an old mattress we had there in front, so that was the toilet. I had to throw out everything. Later on we had the chamber pot because Eddie Kelleher asked the police, Larry Wren, can we have a chamber pot? And then the chamber pot came up with the basket. And each time when there was something in the pot, I had to throw it out of the window. It's a nice joke.
The church leaders call for the release of Dr. Herrimer. In a statement signed by Cardinal Conway, Dr. Sims, the Presbyterian moderator, Dr. Temple Lundy, and Methodist president, Dr. Hedley Plunkett, the churchmen say, with Irish people and those in other lands, we appeal to those now holding Dr. Herrimer to release him unharmed to his wife and family without further...
What was the mood among Eddie and Marion like at this stage?
They more and more got the feeling we are going to lose. And I tried to build it up and discuss it with them and say, well, there is no way out and you could do this or do that and so. And that all was part of the discussion, so you're going to lose. This is on Thursday, the 6th of November. But I'll do it in English immediately. Ed Kelleher is very tired. He has all sorts of complaints. He has pain in his neck. I gave him a massage. He plans to force the situation for the coming weekend, for example, by hurting me, cut off one of my fingers, or tell me again that he is a real soldier, so he doesn't attack, he can't attack an innocent civilian.
And his health was deteriorating, wasn't it?
Yes, he was. He was really, though he had cramp in his neck, and he really had cramp in his neck. But that was the sign that he had mentally he had given up already, but he couldn't say that to Marion Coyle or couldn't say that to the police, so that he flew in sickness, and he was always about cramp in his neck. So I gave him a massage and blah blah blah. So I knew. So this is the beginning of the end. In how they behaved, in the complaints of Eddie Kelleher, the more or less nervousness of Marion Coyle, that it would end.
And were you worried that he might shoot you?
Yes, but again, that up and down. Well, there were periods that they said, well, now he's going to do it, but no, he didn't do it.
Pardon?
Now.
Okay, well, now before you come down, throw your guns out the window.
Take arm, man,
out of
the
place,
yeah.
No. Oh, no, not you throw out your guns, and I'll have to take away the barricades then. Throw your guns out first. You don't, you're nothing to fear. Nothing ought to happen, yeah.
Take man out of the place first.
No question of it. Throw your guns out the window.
At the end of the whole situation on Thursday in October, in November, it was the beginning of November, Eddie Kelleher was very tired and he finally gave up because Marion Coyle, she didn't say so much, but then she said at the end, coming down. And Larry Wren, who was downstairs, said, what do you say? Coming down. And that's how it ended.
During your 36 days as a prisoner, the Guildford Four were sentenced to life in prison. Four men were killed in a Republican feud. The UVF killed another two Catholics, and the Secretary of State for Northern Ireland ended special category status for paramilitary prisoners. You went home to Holland and life went on. Eddie got 20 years, Marion got 15.
The 7th of November. Here, this is the last moment. On Friday, the 7th of November, Eddie Kelleher, during the period that he had a cramp in his neck, he emptied his pockets and he gave me my pocket knife and the screwdriver. And then he took a bullet out of his pocket and he said, and this one was meant for you. And at 21:30 hours, I walked as a free man down the stairs in the house in Monasterhaven. And I was greeted by a big group of policemen, soldiers, etc. Om 21:30 liep ik als een vrij man de trap af van het huis in Monasterhaven en werd verwelkomd door een grote groep politie, soldaten, etc. Meneer Quint van de Nederlandse ambassade was de eerste Nederlander die ik zag.
No question of it. Throw your guns out the window. Okay, right. Fair enough. Okay, there's one down, okay. Okay. Right, third one. Throw the third one out. You have a third one. Take your time for a minute or two now because I have barricades here I want to remove. All right. All right, okay.
One by one now, please. Okay.
Take those out of her way there.
Eddie, take your hands out of your pockets, please. Okay.
Mind yourself.
Come on, Eddie, easy now. Put your hands on your head.
Okay, all right. All right.